When George steps out of his apartment, he intends to just get on the subway like usual and go straight to the studio. But then his phone starts buzzing, and it's Frank. "Frank, hi!" he answers and passes his usual subway entrance. He'll get coffee. And maybe he'll just walk. It's not that far.
"Hey, Gerard."
Frank's voice is friendly. Gerard imagines a smile on his face. He doesn't really remember too much about Frankie from Pensy Prep, especially since he didn't go to many shows and was drinking heavily at the time, but he remembers that smile beaming out from the stage. "What's up?" Gerard asks after a beat of silence.
"So Grant is off at a meeting with some Hollywood types, and everything I have to do requires him, or I just don't fucking want to do it at the moment. So I thought I'd call and see what life in the future is like,"
Frank says. "Uneventful so far, but I just left my apartment to go to the studio, so who knows what the day might bring. If Becky has anything to say about it, there will probably be swords."
"Becky?"
Frank asks. "One of my studio mates. She's also in comics, and she loves anything gory or involving medieval weaponry. Somehow I always end up holding a sword and being a reference for her. I don't know why. She always draws guys with, like, muscles." Frank giggles down the line, and Gerard smiles, pushing open the door to Starbucks. The barista shoots him a thumbs up and starts making his usual. Gerard hands over a $5 and waves absently for them to keep the change. It's twice his usual regular coffee with room, but he figures he owes it to them for being on the phone. So is someone actually going to make one of Grant's movies?
"I don't know. He left sounding pretty skeptical, but I'm kind of afraid that was just talk. Once every few weeks, Grant goes to a meeting and comes back disappointed. It's like clockwork."
Frank sighs. "Sucks," Gerard says, and it does. Grant's work really should be a movie already. It's a crime nothing has made it yet.
"Yeah. Luckily, he's busy enough right now that he can't really stop and wallow. So aside from playing with swords and drawing, you have any other big plans? Weekend fun coming up?"
Frank asks. "Not really. Mikey bribed me into coming home for the weekend, so I'll be in Jersey."
"God, I miss Jersey. I'm so fucking tired of LA.
Like, I know you went out there for your band and all, but why are you still there?"
"I thought if I just kept working hard in the business, eventually I'd find a band or get a steady gig playing somewhere or something. And I can't rag on it too much, because otherwise I wouldn't be working for Grant fucking Morrison, you know? Life's funny like that."
Frank's voice goes all warm and soft on that last sentence. It's pretty adorable, and Gerard totally knows how he feels. Working with Grant is something else. "It is. Grant would probably say it's magic," Gerard says.
"He totally would,"
Frank laughs.
"LA has its good days and bad days. I was maybe more pissed off at traffic than usual this morning, mostly because traffic was being stupider than usual. It's 5 fucking miles between my apartment and Grant's. It might as well be 50 some days, I swear to God."
"You know, as much as I hate the subway sometimes, I think I'll take it over that."
"It's probably your best option. I don't know, I have friends who make it here just fine and love it, but it's not for me. Not permanently, anyway."
Frank sighs over the line. "Do you have plans to move back soon, or what?" Gerard sips at his drink. He definitely wouldn't mind that at all.
"I don't know. I mean, I love working for Grant, and it's a great opportunity, and I don't want to quit. And it's not like he's based in LA all the time, and telecommuting from Jersey would be several time zones easier than trying to do it from here."
Frank sounds like this is a subject he's been having nightmares about or something. Gerard turns and enters the building his studio is in. "Dude, I have a hard enough time with here in LA, but..."
"I know,"
Frank interrupts. "Fuck you," Gerard says, laughing. "But seriously, I can't imagine trying to deal with a, what, 8-hour time difference? That would suck."
"For real. But I don't think I can afford to keep 2 apartments quite yet, you know? I suppose it's not like I have to decide anything right this second. I just always assumed that living in LA was how I was paying my dues in the music business, you know? And now I'm not even doing music, and it's kind of weird."
Frank's voice is kind of wistful. Gerard punches the elevator button for the floor of the studio and prays the elevator isn't busted. He'll definitely have to hang up if he has to go up any stairs. That'd just be embarrassing. It creaks and starts going up, thank God. Like, getting used to changing plans when you think your life is going to go one way and it goes another is fucking weird. "I think you're allowed a little time to feel weird, though," Gerard says as the door opens to the right floor. He pushes open the studio door and waves at Becky as he makes his way to his station. "You totally get an adjustment period here."
"Yeah, you're right."
Frank sighs again.
"I should probably let you go and bite the bullet and just do this shit I don't want to do."
"Yeah, I just got to the studio, so I probably should get to work as well. Thanks for calling, Frankie." Gerard cringes. Maybe he shouldn't have used the nickname. Apparently that's okay, because Gerard can tell Frank's smiling when he starts talking.
"Hey, thanks for the distraction. Have a great day, Gerard. Oh, and tell your brother hi for me."
"You too, Frankie. I will. Bye." They hang up and Gerard starts getting situated. After a minute, the silence is broken. Gerard Way, was that a boy? Becky asks in an alarmingly gleeful tone. Yes? What I mean is, you haven't stopped smiling since you hung up. It's kind of creepy, actually. He rubs his cheeks. It's true. Talking to Frank just makes him pretty happy, but it's complicated. How? Becky presses. Well, he's in Los Angeles, for one. That was like the third time we've talked on the phone. We usually email, Gerard says. He's a pen pal? That is so fucking adorable and old-fashioned, Becky says. He's Grant's assistant. Gerard sighs and runs a hand through his hair. Ooh! Becky draws out the O dramatically. She props her chin on her hand and asks, so, like, is that a problem for you? Not really. I mean, we'll meet in San Diego if, like, I don't know, we're just friends. And he's from Jersey and he doesn't like it in LA, so I'm a good person to talk to about home. Gerard waves his hands around and sighs. Okay, but you like him, right? Becky asks. Gerard sighs deeply. Yes. So play it by ear, see what happens in San Diego. I mean, at worst you keep talking about Jersey on the phone and emailing. Though I don't generally give buddies I'm just friendly with through work earnest little pep talks about life plans and adjusting. I'm just saying. Her eyebrow is raised at him, and he shrugs again. You could hear that? The door isn't exactly soundproof, dude. So what are you working on today? I have pages I have to send in by the end of the week, so you can make me stand around holding swords for hours. She sticks her tongue out at him. Just for that, since I get to choose the warm-up sketch subject today, the theme is swords. Gerard laughs. I like swords too, you know. I just don't include them in every drawing I do. He pulls his sketchbook out and gets to work. Gerard throws his duffel in the back seat of Mikey's car, where it's idling outside the station, and then slumps up front. So, does the trip from Brooklyn on a Friday afternoon still suck? Mikey asks. Yep. Too many people, too long, smelly. Well, if it was smelly and you noticed. Oh, fuck you, you're no better. Gerard grouses and pushes his sunglasses back up his nose. They make the turn down Mikey's street, and on the corner is a VFW hall. Gerard has a sudden flash of memory, of standing in the back with a red plastic cup practically overflowing with beer from a keg and listening to Pensy Prep play. He hadn't been able to see much over the sea of bodies, but he definitely remembers being there. He also remembers that a fight broke out after, and he dodged more than one stray fist. Hey, remember going to see Pensy Prep play there and then the fight after? Gerard asks Mikey. Pretty sure I went to, like, 5 shows that could be described exactly like that, dude. Mikey says. No, but I was there. And I think someone in the band had to get stitches? I don't remember exactly. Pretty sure I left before it got to that point. Gerard picks at the hole in the knee of his jeans. He's also pretty sure he was too drunk to retain any details, but that's not the point, and Mikey doesn't need the reminder. Oh, yeah, Mikey says. I think it was Hambone. Man, I haven't thought about those guys in forever. Frankie is Grant's assistant, Gerard blurts out. Frank Iero is Grant Morrison's assistant. Mikey sounds incredulous. Yeah, like, he went out to L.A. with his second band to record and they broke up and Frank stayed and tried to crack into the music business, but that didn't work out. So he knew Trent fucking Reznor through his studio or something and Trent got him the job with Grant. It's fucking wild, Gerard explains. Holy shit. Pretty much, Gerard agrees. It's a small fucking world. Anyway, he's, like, ridiculously fucking good at his job because working with Grant has gotten, like, 1,000 times easier. I talked to him on the phone yesterday. He said to tell you hi. Tell him I say hi, Mikey says. Later that evening, Mikey's roommate, Ray, gets home from work, and they all pile in Ray's car and go in search of some decent food. Ray turns on the radio. A song Gerard doesn't recognize wraps up, and then the DJ starts talking. And that one was for our very own Mikey Way, who's off partying and left me here to do his work. Be sure to call and request it frequently. Mikey groans. That fucker always plays that stupid song when he fills in for me. And then I have to fuck around with 1 million people calling in to request that goddamn song. Gerard cracks up. He's heard more than one rant from Mikey about having to play certain songs when they're requested. Clearly, this is one of them. I hear that's the price you pay for complaining about something in front of a known troll, Ray intones wisely. Mikey reaches up from the back seat and pounds Ray on the shoulder with his fist. Of course, they end up at a diner, and Gerard is just reminded of his first phone conversation with Frank, so he tells them both how Frank remembers Mikey selling his bootleg DVDs, and then he has to tell Ray the whole story of what Frank is up to now and where he is. This gets Ray and Mikey telling their Frank stories. There aren't many, but it's enough to completely delight Gerard. The next day, none of it has really left Gerard's mind. Over one last cup of fortifying coffee before heading over to their parents' place for a family dinner, Gerard asks Mikey about Pensy, about the shows he missed. He's glad he's getting to know Frank now, but he wonders a little bit what it would have been like to have known him this whole time. Mikey, of course, sees right through him. So, how much do you and Frank talk? Gerard shrugs. Depends. Mostly we email or text. The phone is kind of a new thing. So, are you like... Mikey gives a tiny wave with his fingers. Gerard shrugs again. He has no fucking idea. Frank's phone rings a few days later, and it's Gerard. Frank grins at the screen for a moment before he answers. They chat for a while about their days, about random shit that pops to mind, and then, as the call is winding down, Frank remembers that he has this little thing called a job he is supposed to be doing. Well, he has been working the entire time they were talking, but usually people call because they need something from Grant. So he says, "Hey, Gerard, we never got around to, like, the original purpose of your call."
"Sure we did,"
Gerard says. Frank thinks back over the conversation, and he's pretty sure he didn't answer any important questions or anything. "Did we? I don't remember this at all." Gerard laughs.
"I just called to talk, because talking to you sounded infinitely better than doing thumbnails."
Frank's been wandering around with the phone, and just as Gerard says this, he's in Grant's office, phone clamped between his ear and his shoulder, rifling for some paperwork, and he says, "Oh." He's surprised, and pretty pleased, and without really thinking about it, he adds teasingly, "I tell you, talking to you is infinitely better than just looking for lost invoices, but my boss is about 3 feet away, and I don't want him to think I'm a lazy asshole." And smirks at Grant, who's at his desk. Grant raises an eyebrow, looking vastly amused. "Who could possibly be better than my invoices?" Frank says, "Oh," again, and then adds, "Gerard." "Ah, well, no argument there. But if you don't mind, I do, conveniently, actually have a question for him." Frank says goodbye and hands the phone over to Grant. Frank continues searching for the invoices as Grant and Gerard talk. Frank loves listening to Grant talk about his work because he finds it fascinating, but he likes it when he's talking to Gerard even more, because Frank can guess what Gerard's saying and how he's saying it, even though he can't hear Gerard's part of the conversation. He sort of wishes he could, but he's also got work to do, so he leaves them to it and goes back to his office. Frank doesn't know, on the whole, how to feel about the part of his job that involves Grant and magic, because he, without fail, always pictures the wands and spellcasting type of magic, courtesy of umpteen rereads of Harry Potter, and he has to just bite his tongue and schedule Grant's corporate consultations without comment. But listening to Grant actually talk on the subject is less like going to, like, charms class, and more like listening to someone discuss philosophy or science or something. That actually makes some sense. And when other people bring it up so casually, like Gerard had last week, it's hard for him to shake. Maybe he really just does want to think he was meant to take this job, because otherwise he has to think way too hard about what the hell he's still doing in LA. He can't stop thinking about what the hell he's still doing in LA, especially after that conversation with Gerard. Especially now that Grant is starting to make noises about his return to Scotland. Frank makes a mental note to try to call Grant's former assistant at DC. She certainly ought to be back from her maternity leave now, because it's been... Frank counts back, and his eyes widen when he realizes he's been working for Grant for nearly 6 months. It feels like, well, longer, really, now that he thinks about it. But no matter how much insight Megan can give him into remotely managing Grant's workflow, there are 3 short-lived assistants and... rather a lot of changes to the job description between her tenure and Frank's. Grant's not a great deal of help. Frank's pretty sure he hasn't realized how much the job has changed either. Frank knows. He knows most of that is his own doing. There were just so many things that Frank could do for Grant, and he wanted to do them, and now... well, now he's not going to be able to. They're both going to have to deal with that. There's a UPS box on Grant's front porch when Frank gets there. It's the monthlies from DC, Frank's pretty sure. They were supposed to have been delivered yesterday. They probably were delivered yesterday, but Frank had taken the afternoon off to go see his friend Mike, whose band had been in town for the night, and clearly Grant had forgotten to check. Frank makes a mental note to make sure the mailroom at DC changes Grant's address for the summer, and picks up the box. Frank's early this morning, so he can catch up from yesterday, and he's somewhat surprised to hear Grant already typing when he walks down the hall to the offices. He nudges Grant's door open with his shoulder and carries the box over to Grant's desk, dropping it on the visitor chair. "Special delivery," he says. "Good morning," Grant smiles. "And you come bearing gifts?"
"I come bearing DC's gifts," Frank corrects.
"You're up early."
"I am," Grant replies. "Vince called me this morning at 5 a.m. "Five. I asked him what in the world he was thinking, and he played me the same sad tune about already having eaten lunch and just forgotten there were time zones involved."
"So, it's Thursday," Frank smirks.
"As you say."
Grant looks back at his computer, types for a few seconds, then looks back up at Frank.
"Our schedules won't overlap much after I go home, will they?"
Grant says thoughtfully, like it's just occurred to him.
Frank does not roll his eyes, possibly because he hasn't had coffee yet and isn't coordinated enough.
"No, Grant, they won't," he says gently.
"Megan worked 7 till 3 during the summer," Grant says thoughtfully. "There's one question to tick off Frank's list, but that was Eastern time, and..."
He studies Frank for a moment.
"You've already thought of this, haven't you?"
Frank nods. "Yes, Grant. I'll adjust my hours as much as I can. You usually work into the evening anyway, you know." He tries to sound upbeat, but, again, with no coffee, it's not the easiest thing to do. Frank turns his attention to cutting open the box of comics, but he can feel Grant's eyes on him. Finally, Grant says, "Very well," and goes back to typing. It sounds like he wanted to say more, but he doesn't continue, and Frank does not ask. On Wednesday, Grant pokes his head into Frank's office and asks, "Frank, could you book me a flight to Glasgow for the 3rd? No, make that the 2nd, because I'll need to be there by the 3rd. British Airways has nonstop flights from LAX to Heathrow, which I would prefer, though a short layover in New York or New Jersey wouldn't be the end of the world." Grant disappears back down the hall. Frank feels like Grant just set a time bomb on his desk. He knew it was coming, especially after their conversation about time zone issues. But apparently he hadn't been prepared for it. Maybe because he still hadn't come up with a good plan for the whole time zones thing, and he'd been focusing so much on that aspect that everything else was suddenly, intensely overwhelming, and he's filled with worry. Frank looks up flights and gets out Grant's credit card and books one, and it's done. Most of Frank's attempts to actually do his job just don't work. He ends up staring into space, tapping a pen repeatedly on the desk, or pacing around his office. He's worried about everything. How he'll keep up with Grant on another continent, how he'll deal with Grant being on a totally different schedule than him, whether Grant will actually eat and sleep like a human being. Frank knows that sometimes Grant will deliberately deprive himself of sleep in order to get to another level of inspiration or whatever, but the very thought makes Frank twitch. When Grant comes back into Frank's office a few minutes later, Frank has to work hard to school his features into something approaching normal. "Flight's booked," Frank says with false cheer.
"Excellent."
Grant smiles at him. "Did you need me to make any other arrangements for your trip?" Frank asks.
"My sister is bringing my car and picking me up from the airport, so the flight's the only thing. Thank you, Frank."
Frank smiles and nods. He feels wooden and strange, but Grant switches smoothly to another topic and then another, and Frank tries to keep up. It's just, Frank's going to miss Grant. Practically his entire life has been revolving around Grant for months, and now he won't be there. Frank will be coming to an empty house to work. Not even the cats will be there to keep him company. He's having a hard time not feeling as if he's being left all of a sudden. Over the next couple of weeks, he busies himself getting everything ready. He ships several boxes of things to Grant's house in Scotland. Grant assures him someone is collecting his mail and packages and taking them to the house, so everything will be there when Grant arrives. Frank can't help but leave detailed instructions and lists of the contents in the top of each one. Partly out of necessity, so Grant doesn't have to open a box and rummage through looking for what he wants. And also because a tiny part of himself wants Grant to have reminders that Frank exists. He knows, in theory, that he should be able to work just fine with Grant away. The internet should make it pretty easy, all told. Should. Frank can't quite shake the feeling that everything is about to go to hell in a handbasket. While Frank's busy trying to just stay on top of things and help out, he's quietly freaking out and trying not to. It doesn't help that everyone who calls seems to want to chit-chat with some variation of, "So, Grant must be looking forward to going home, huh?" He ends up being sort of snappish to someone the 4th or 5th time it happens, and he feels bad but also twisted up inside. So he just sits at his desk and rubs his head. He hears Grant walk down the hall, and a few minutes later, Grant brings him a cup of tea and sits it down on the desk by Frank's hand with a quiet click. Frank is mortified that Grant saw him lying down on the job, literally.
But also, Grant is spoiling him and it makes him squirm. He wants to say something to Grant, but everything seems like too much or not enough. So Frank thanks him for the tea and sips it slowly. Grant's departure day comes, and he's called a car to come pick him up because he's got the cats as well as his own stuff, and Frank helps him get everything loaded, and then the cab is idling in the driveway, and Frank mumbles to himself, "Shit." He clenches and releases his fists a couple of times. "Have a safe trip," he finally says. Grant smiles at him, and Frank kind of wants to run away. "I'm sure I will. Frank." Suddenly, Grant's pulling him in for a hug, arms sliding around his shoulders. Grant has never really touched him like this before, and it feels good. Frank can't stand how good it feels, but he makes himself smile at Grant anyway because Grant deserves that, and not Frank's fucking issues. Then he climbs into the cab, and it drives away, and Frank waves once. When he's standing by himself in Grant's driveway, he feels very small. Finally, Frank goes back inside because no matter how he feels, he still has work to do. Grant's house suddenly feels very large and very empty. Every noise he makes sounds extra loud. He has trouble concentrating on the emails, so he sets to work filing. The phone rings, and of course it's Gerard, because Gerard always seems to have perfect timing, and Frank doesn't say a word about Grant leaving, just listens to Gerard's story about how Mikey's cat had eaten through his laptop cord the other day, and how he hadn't noticed until the battery died, but he'd remembered to back up the inks to his external drive, and wasn't Frank proud? And Frank laughs and says he is proud, and says he'll pass them along to Grant when Grant arrives in Glasgow. And the sentence comes out smoothly, and things feel okay for now. They manage to get through about a week before things start going all to hell. Grant starts keeping weird hours, and Frank can never get a hold of him, and he just knows the correspondence is a mess, and that there are things he should be taking care of if he just knew what they were. Finally, Grant actually answers the phone when Frank calls for once. Frank yells a little. Grant, atypically, growls a little bit.
"I'm fine," he says.
"It's
fine, you're worrying about nothing. Go to a gig or do something 20-somethings like to do."
That's really rich of him, because Grant lives it up more than Frank does. He feels like he's being condescended to, so he just says a short, "fine," and hangs up, and goes back to working out a scheduling thing and finishing an email to Grant's LA agent. A week later, Grant is minutes away from missing a scheduled event in Glasgow, and Frank gets a call from Grant's rep at his London publishing house.
"He's not here,"
Liam says, frantically. Liam, I am sorry. Let me call him." "Liam, I am in fucking Los Angeles," is what Frank thinks, but does not say. Frank puts the office phone on hold and dials Grant's cell from his cell, and he feels ridiculous, but he does get hold of Grant that way after letting the call ring through at least twice. Grant's at the wrong address. Luckily, the wrong address is just minutes by cab away from the right address, and things work out, but Frank calls again after the event, and this time he is really mad. The second call that Grant gets from Frank, he doesn't really yell. Frank just very calmly lays out that this isn't working, and lately all Grant is paying for him to do is make a lot of expensive international calls to Grant, on Grant's dime, that just end in Frank leaving a message on the answering machine and Grant never returning his calls. And lots of frustration for everyone.
"Gerard is freaking out about deadlines because you haven't gotten the rewrites to him, Dan wants to talk to you and you haven't emailed him back, and Vince can't even get in touch with you and you're in the same fucking country. And they're all calling me as if I have answers and I don't, which makes me seem incompetent and makes it harder for me to do my job in the future. Can we please do something? Because I can't coordinate all this stuff from another continent if you're not holding up your end of the deal."
Frank's voice is practically icy, and that is what makes Grant stop instead of getting angry back. Because he suddenly realizes that Frank is really, truly upset. And it's not that he didn't realize Frank was angry and annoyed before, but it felt different. Like Frank would just get fed up and force him to go to bed or put a plate of food under his nose. But Frank's not here to do that, and Grant is entirely too stubborn. It's almost as if he's been rebelling against Frank's presence in his life, which is stupid because Frank has, by and large, made everything better. Clearly, he depends on Frank far more than he ever expected. Far more than he's ever depended on any one person aside from his parents as a small child. He's not entirely certain what to do with that, except he knows he needs to make it up to Frank. "Come to Scotland," falls out of his mouth before he really thinks about it, but when he does think about it, he wouldn't take it back for the world. "Please."
"What?"
Frank asks, clearly taken aback. "Come to Scotland. You can stay until Comic-Con and we can sort out everything I've mucked up, and then we can settle on a set plan for when I'm away that actually works, and that I promise I will stick to." There's silence down the line for an extended moment, and Grant prepares himself for a good grovel when Frank says quietly,
"Okay.
I'll get you a ticket right now." Grant turns to his computer and types in the address for a travel site. "How soon do you think you can fly out?"
I suppose I could come out, like, tomorrow.
Frank sounds hesitant. "Frank, you don't have to be here immediately unless you want to." Grant hopes Frank wants to.
"No, I can. It's not like I have some crazy life that I have to make arrangements for. I don't even have a dog."
Frank's tone is joking, but Grant can tell it's not really much of a joke. Grant suddenly remembers what he said on the phone the other day and feels immediately guilty. "Frank."
"So what are my options for flights?"
Frank interrupts. Grant reads off the options, and Frank chooses a flight leaving at 9:20 p.m. L.A. time and arriving in Glasgow at 7 p.m. the next day.
"Oh, God."
Frank moans.
"I know that sounds more ridiculous than it actually is, but I'm going to be on the plane for a long fucking time. I think I deserve a raise for this, or a bonus or something."
"Well, you do deserve a raise, and I've been meaning to give you one, so consider it done," Grant says.
"Grant, I was joking. You didn't have to..."
Grant interrupts this time. "Frank, I know. You deserve the raise, especially since we haven't found health insurance for you yet."
"Okay,"
Frank says. Grant can practically see the incredulous look on Frank's face.
"Is there anything you need me to bring from the house?"
"Nothing I can think of at the moment. I'll call you tomorrow if I come up with anything," Grant answers.
"Okay, I guess I'll see you the day after tomorrow."
"Yes, I'll meet you in baggage claim. And Frank?"
"Yeah?"
"Thank you."
"Just doing my job,"
he says. "No, you're not. You're going far above and beyond, and you're not just my employee, but also a friend." Grant finds he wants Frank to be very clear on this point. He hears Frank take a deep breath over the line, but he doesn't say anything. "See you soon, Frank."
"Yeah,"
Frank finally says, and Grant knows he's agreeing to more than just the fact that they'll see each other.
"Bye. Well, good night for you, I guess."
Grant smiles. "Good afternoon, Frank." Frank's first full day in Scotland is kind of weird, and surreal, and just plain nice. He'd arrived in Glasgow the previous evening, and Grant had met him at the airport with a broad grin and a hand on Frank's shoulder. The drive had been beautiful and ridiculously picturesque, and there had even been a ferry ride, which Frank had done thousands of times before, but close to sunset in Scotland turned it into a whole other experience. By the time they arrived at Grant's house, which, even through half-lidded eyes, looked amazingly lovely, and got his stuff into the bedroom Grant told him was his for the duration, Frank could hardly stay on his feet. He hadn't slept on the plane, really. He hardly knew up from down. But he hadn't meant to go to sleep right away. Apparently, seeing the bed was enough of a reminder that he hadn't slept in a billion hours. Grant had noticed right away and insisted he sleep, and everything else could wait for morning. Frank expects to get up, get ready for the day, and get to work like normal. Well, as normal as it can be in an entirely different country where Frank can't even plug in his laptop like usual. A fact he'd forgotten until his layover at Heathrow, when he had frantically searched the airport shops and paid far too much for a couple of adapters like all the other poor suckers unused to international travel. What Frank gets is Grant ushering him into the car again, and Frank is seriously never going to get used to riding on the wrong side, and taking him out for a proper breakfast and some sights to be seen. "I can't just make you work straight away," Grant insists when Frank asks. "It's your first time in a new country. You've got to see a bit. Get familiar with it before you dive into business." "You're the only boss in the history of ever to think that," Frank tells him. "Since when have I been like other bosses?" Grant asks. Frank rolls his eyes. So Grant shows him around the town. It's almost exactly like Frank pictured it, which is to say, something out of a storybook. Grant tells him all these random little details that are apparently just floating in his head. Frank's favorite part is when Grant shows him the area haunted house. It's appropriately spooky looking, and Grant seems convinced of the story's legitimacy, and it makes Frank shiver in the best way. They stop in at Grant's usual grocery place on their way back to the house, and the woman behind the counter immediately starts in on Grant, asking who Frank is, teasing him about finally bringing his boyfriend home to meet everyone. It makes Frank's stomach flip and his cheeks heat, and he has no idea what to do with his hands. Grant rolls his eyes and introduces Frank as his assistant. Frank has no idea what he's feeling. "Sorry, lovely," the lady says to Frank. "We've got to take the piss out of our big shot writer. He just let it go to his head. Maybe you can make him eat a decent meal now and again. I swear, all he ever buys is tea." "That's a bald-faced lie, Katie," Grant retorts. Fine, fine, biscuits too. Tea and biscuits, all he ever buys. Katie winks at Frank. Frank can't really help but smile back. I suppose you'll be getting proper food now, though. Your young assistant here needs sustenance in order to deal with the likes of you on a daily basis. Between the three of them, they end up with several bags of various parts of different recipes, and Frank is struck by how surreal this is. They'll be, essentially, living and working closely together for at least the next month. Their boss-employee relationship hadn't been particularly conventional to start out with. Frank thinks, not for the first time, that maybe this is a little bit insane. Frank's first full day of actual work is kind of weird, too. Grant's office isn't exactly large. It doesn't really need to be, because it's usually just him at his desk with a notebook or his computer. Frank and all his things definitely do not fit, so he's constantly in and out, double-checking information with Grant, making schedules and lists, and sorting through all the correspondence that's piled up. There are a lot of emails that Grant forgot to send on to Frank. Frank can tell Grant is getting a little frustrated, and Frank isn't keeping a lid on it much better. Finally, he just leans over Grant, takes over his mouse, and goes all the way back to the last day Grant was working in LA. He sorts through all the emails, sending him the things he knows he needs to take care of. Grant's so close, and God, he smells great, and Frank is an idiot, and he shouldn't have just taken over like that anyway. And ugh. Okay, we need a break, Frank declares upon standing straight again. Grant nods, and they both go downstairs. Grant sets the kettle going, and when the water is hot, they sit at the table and drink their tea in silence for a couple of minutes. Frank sighs and runs a hand over his face. Okay, can we maybe work down here for the rest of the day, or at least until I mostly have everything in control? Frank asks. I know you like writing up there, but until I have all this stuff organized, it's just gonna be more of the same. Grant smiles ruefully. It's my fault. The least I can do is help fix the mess. And like, can you just tell everyone to copy me on emails from now on? Our forwarding system only works when you actually check your email. I mean, most everyone knows by now, but there are enough that don't that I'm probably going to be spending a good chunk of tomorrow catching up on correspondence. Well, that was a more effective guilt trip than even my mother could send me, Grant says. No, I didn't mean... Grant laughs and brushes Frank's wrist with his fingers. Frank, it was well deserved. I've been appalling at any semblance of keeping business straight since coming here, and for that, I apologize. I've made your job so complicated that you had to come to another country to complete it. We shall sit here for the rest of today, or however long you require, and I will do whatever you wish me to do. Okay, Frank says. We should start with the correspondence, because a lot of your schedule is going to depend on the responses we get from people. And we really need to send Gerard your rewrites, because he's kind of starting to freak out. Grant grimaces. This script is not cooperating. Do you at least have some of it? Because I seriously think just giving him a few pages to start on would make him feel better about, like, life. If the edge of panic in Gerard's voice the last time Frank had talked to him was anything to go by, at any rate, Frank had kind of wanted to give him a hug through the phone. When Frank feels the telltale tickle in his throat, the headache starting to throb, the exhaustion setting in, he wants to punch things. He does not fucking have time to be sick. Especially not when he's in another country to fucking work, and Grant is in the sort of writing groove where Frank has to convince him that food is something he actually needs, and maybe also a little bit of sleep, periodically. He takes his anger out on a poor admin who calls from DC, and then immediately feels awful. He calls back to apologize, but he still feels bad, and by the time he decides to stop for the day, he's thoroughly miserable. Before he lets himself collapse, he makes Grant a sandwich and takes it up to him. Grant thanks him absently and takes a bite, typing one-handed. Frank sighs and rolls his eyes. He's sure Grant will stay up to the wee hours. If Grant wants to exhaust himself, Frank doesn't have the energy to try to talk him out of it tonight. He goes to his room and doesn't wake up again until his alarm goes off the next morning. Frank is pretty sure that dragging himself out of bed is the hardest thing he's had to do in a while. The kitchen shows evidence that Grant has been down recently. Frank is grateful because that means there's still hot water in the kettle for him to make some tea. That's the only thing his throat can handle at the moment. He makes it through the morning okay. He even manages to talk on the phone without sounding too awful. He makes him lunch, which Grant actually shows his face for, but he's distracted and eats quickly before heading right back to his office. Frank feels himself deflate as soon as Grant's out of sight. He starts feeling more terrible as the day wears on, but he soldiers through. He's got shit to do and he needs to start preparing for San Diego before too long, which means he really can't get behind on anything. The next day is much the same. Attempting to sound human on the phone and trying to maintain his usual workload and deal with Grant without breaking his concentration or alerting him to the fact that Frank is ill. It's pretty easy, given how caught up Grant is in everything. He gets through the day on copious amounts of tea and paracetamol he finds in the bathroom, which the internet tells Frank is Tylenol. The following morning, he wakes up coughing. He's so busy hacking away that he jumps a little bit when Grant sits on the edge of his bed. "I heard you all the way down the hall. Do you need water?" Grant asks. Frank shakes his head no. "Frank, why didn't you tell me you were ill?" Grant asks gently.
"I'm surprised you even noticed."
The words come tumbling out before Frank can stop himself. Grant looks vaguely guilty, but Frank starts talking again before he can say anything in response.
"There's so much to fucking do."
Frank punctuates his sentence with a cough.
"I don't have time to be sick."
"Whether or not you have the time, you clearly are. Please take a day off, Frank. I am nearly done with the script and will make every effort to not let everything fall into disarray." Frank must make a dubious face because Grant laughs. "I know I haven't given you much cause to trust me in this area, but perhaps I can earn some. Go back to sleep, Frank. I promise to answer the phone at least every other time it rings and to write down everything."
"In one spot," Frank croaks, "not scattered around on 5 different pieces of paper and a gazillion post-its."
"I shall find a blank notebook, call it Notes for Frank, and put them all there," Grant promises. Frank does sleep, albeit somewhat fitfully given all the coughing. A few hours later, he comes out of a doze to the sound of Grant tapping on the door jamb. "I made tea, if you'd like some," Grant says, and comes in the door, tray in hand. Frank sits up, and Grant sets the tray next to him. There's also toast and a bottle of what appears to be cough syrup.
"You didn't have to."
"But I did. Drink your tea. If toast is too much, I can get you something softer," Grant says.
"Thank you,"
Frank says, and sips his tea. Frank sleeps through most of the rest of the day, squinting at the clock whenever he wakes and dosing himself with more cough syrup if it's time. He sleeps through what could properly be called lunchtime and is awakened from another sweaty doze around tea time by a gentle hand on his shoulder. "Frank," Grant says softly. Frank murmurs a vague protest into his pillow. He's veering between embarrassment and wide-eyed gratitude that Grant would continue to wait on him when he's used to taking care of himself. He rolls, and Grant's hand slips down to his chest for a moment. The warm weight feels good against his abused muscles, and he wishes Grant wouldn't move it. Grant doesn't move it as quickly as Frank expects him to, but he is still turning toward the tray he's brought before Frank can properly enjoy the moment. "I brought more medicine," Grant says, "and soup from the market. Katie's worried about you. She insisted on sending you oranges and told me very sternly to tend you well." Frank smiles tiredly. He likes Katie. The oranges are on the tray, too, 3 of them nestled in a deep red bowl. The soup is in a blue one. The whole tray is very Grant. Grant is fond of pretty things, and Frank loves that about him, and he transfers the smile to Grant as he pushes himself into a sitting position. Grant smiles back at him. His hand moves toward Frank and then jerks back a little bit and rests lightly on Frank's calf for a few seconds before Grant draws it away again. "Has the sleep helped any?" Grant asks. Frank takes stock.
"Didn't hurt at any rate."
Grant frowns. "If you need anything at all, please ask, Frank. Anything." Frank looks down at the tray Grant sets in his lap and looks back up.
"I think I'm pretty good for now."
He starts coughing again. It's short and not that bad, but when he's done, he sees Grant looking at him with concern. More concern.
"I'm fine,"
Frank says. Grant looks skeptical. "You should take more medicine." Frank glances at the clock.
"Can't for another hour. I'll be fine, I promise. How was it today? Did you finish the script? Anything you need me to take care of?"
"Frank, the only thing I need you to do right now is eat your soup and rest. Yes, I did finish the script and even managed to send it on to Janelle." Grant smiles ruefully. "She emailed me back from her mobile, telling me to thank you for being a miracle and to prepare yourself for hugs in San Diego. She may have also mentioned beer. I'd take offense at her lack of faith in me, but she's correct. Without you here, this wouldn't be finished right now."
"How did she even know?"
Frank asks incredulously. "I may have emailed several people and told them they could all stop being horrible nags because you were here now to do it for them." Grant smiles sheepishly, and it's kind of adorable.
"Hey, I'm not..."
"Sometimes you are, a little bit, but sometimes it's what I need. Most of the time, your mere presence is enough of a reminder." Frank feels his face flush. He has no idea how to respond, but it turns out that doesn't matter because he starts coughing again. Grant retrieves the tray from his lap, and he curls in on himself and coughs himself out. For the time being.
"Are you sure there's nothing I can do?"
Grant asks, his face the very picture of worry. Frank nods and gestures for him to give back the tray.
"I can take some more medicine soon enough."
"Not nearly soon enough, actually. I should let you eat and go back to sleep." Grant makes to get up, but Frank stops him.
Stay for a bit,
Frank wheezes. He suddenly finds that the thought of being alone is distressing.
Tell me how the day went. Did anything else happen?
Grant starts talking as Frank eats, telling him more about Katie and the phone calls he took and how Vince called and wants to visit before they all leave for Comic-Con. How his sister is ridiculous, but he supposes he has no room to talk. It's exactly what Frank needed. By the time he's done with his soup, it's time to take more medicine, so he does. The next thing he knows, he's waking himself up coughing again, and it's 3 a.m. and he has to flail himself out of the duvet. Apparently, he fell asleep and Grant must have... Frank coughs harder and shakily measures out the liquid and downs it quickly. When he wakes up in the morning, the only thing he really knows is that he can't possibly stay in bed again today. Even if he's not working, he can't fucking stay there. So he grabs a book, his medicine, and a pillow, and goes downstairs to curl up in Grant's egg chair in the sitting room. Grant discovers him there about half an hour later. "You didn't answer my knock," Grant says, "and I was a bit concerned. But here you are. Are you improved? Because you look terrible, zombie-like, horrifying." Frank smiles a little to show that he's kidding. Grant smirks back. "I would never say so. I was about to say embryonic, though." He pauses. "But I think it's mostly the chair." Frank snorts. "You think?" He likes the chair, though. Likes that it's just randomly in Grant's sitting room with a hodgepodge of other furniture. Likes that it's clearly actually meant to be sat in. It's as fucking endearing as everything else about Grant, actually, and Frank is so fucked it isn't even funny. He closes his eyes for a moment and coughs. "Please, let me just get better." Grant disappears with a murmured, "Hold that thought." Frank frowns, hoping Grant doesn't actually know what thought he'd just told Frank to hold. Well, not the getting better part, the endearing part. Then Grant reappears with his arms full of things. A laptop, a couple of books, his notebook, the cordless phone stacked on top. Frank stares. "Are you?" "If you're going to sit in here today, Frank, I will work in here." "No." Grant cuts off his thought before it can slip out of his mouth. "You are not working. You are resting. But you can rest in the same room as me. I'll enjoy not being alone," Frank admits. Frank does end up sitting quietly for most of the day, although several times when the phone rings and Grant answers, he talks and talks with a particularly manic expression that practically screams, "Get me out of here!" The third time it happens, Frank is sipping a cup of hot tea, but he waves his hand to get Grant's attention and makes a gimme gesture. Grant hesitates, clearly having an argument with himself about whether or not he should let Frank talk on the phone, but then cringes back from the earpiece. "I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. I'm going to give the phone to my assistant now. Have a good day." Grant hands the phone off to Frank. "Hello, Frank Iero speaking." The second the person on the other line starts talking, Frank knows who it is. "You just don't give up, do you? Listen, Mr. Morrison is not interested. He wasn't interested last month, he wasn't interested last week, and he's still not interested today. You must have something better to do with your time than waste ours." Frank hangs up. That was the most satisfying thing he's done in days. He looks up to find Grant looking at him bemusedly. Frank smiles and shrugs and curls back up in the chair, this time with the phone in easy reach. Frank drifts in and out of sleep, waking to answer the phone or read for a few minutes. Around lunchtime, he gets up and tries to make lunch for them, but he drops a pan with a loud clatter, and Grant comes rushing in and makes him go back to the chair. Frank would feel guilty and useless, but he's so tired that he falls asleep almost immediately and only wakes when Grant shakes him. They share a tray of soup and sandwiches. It feels nice, having Grant take care of him. Better than nice. Frank hates that he feels like he needs it. He answers a call a few minutes later and feels somewhat better. That, plus the lunch, is enough to mostly quiet his feelings of unease at how easy it is for him to just let Grant coddle him. Later that afternoon, the phone rings and Frank answers as usual, but this time it's Katie on the other end.
"Is that man making you work? He should be ashamed of himself. I told him to take care of you, not work you to death. I oughta..."
"Katie, I'm fine. I'm relaxing in a comfortable chair, and the only thing I do is answer the phone every once in a while. Believe me, it's for the best," Frank assures her. He smiles. He really does like Katie. "And Grant made me lunch," Frank tells her, "and I had one of your oranges with breakfast. Did you call just to check up on me?"
"Check up on me, more likely," Grant grumbles from the couch, and Katie laughs.
"I heard that. Take care of yourself, dearie. I'll let you rest now."
When Frank hangs up the phone, he looks up and meets Grant's eyes. Grant's lips are twitching. "She's such a mother hen, and she has no faith in me whatsoever, clearly."
"You did make me take that phone call this morning," Frank teases. "The 10-second evisceration, you mean? Ah, now, you enjoyed that. I'm taking it as a sign you're feeling better."
"Maybe," Frank concedes. He is definitely feeling better the next day. He's not sure he could spend a whole day at a desk at this point, but taking Grant's calls from the egg chair is sort of hilarious. He feels like something out of a Bond movie. Grant throws back his head and laughs when Frank tells him that and makes him a Spectre Command Center sign on a post-it note. Grant's not writing today. The annual trip to San Diego for Comic-Con coincides, roughly, with the midpoint of his summer stay, which apparently always means shipping boxes of things Grant's decided need to go back to L.A. Frank had thought Grant's office in L.A. was surprisingly sparse, despite being desperately disorganized, and it had only become clear upon his arrival in Scotland that the reason for this was that the house in Scotland was the true repository, for books, for documents, for awards, for art, for the things that make up Grant. It's the books he's mining for material, mostly, and he's surprisingly decisive about what he wants and needs. Frank, still recovering from his terrible cold, feels lethargic and useless. Grant has a list. Frank's never seen him have a list for anything. Frank just curls himself up into an even tinier ball in his chair and watches the packing process. Grant had snapped, gently, but still with a bit of bite, the last time he tried to get up and go over there. Frank's disturbed from an absent-minded and ill-advised study of Grant's favorite white pants when his phone rings. "Gerard," he says happily into the phone.
"Frank, hi, it's been forever. How are you?"
Gerard sounds plenty enthusiastic himself. It really has been a while. The book Gerard and Grant are doing, it finished its first arc, and Grant won't start sending scripts for the second until after his California trip. I was sick for a while. Getting better. I'd better recover soon or I'll be the most useless employee ever." "You're making a pretty good supervisor right now," Grant teases as he walks by, clearly having overheard.
"Is that Grant?"
Gerard asks.
"I thought he was in Scotland."
"He is," Frank replies. "So am I." He makes a face at Grant, who makes it right back.
"Oh,"
says Gerard.
"I thought you were LA-based.
"Technically I am," Frank says. "This was a special case. Wow, I'm sorry I haven't called, but I've been here for a few weeks and I'll be here a couple more, I guess, until the con."
"I hope you're enjoying yourself a little,"
Gerard says.
"I'm actually half Scottish and I've always wanted to see it. Never got around to it."
"You should," Frank gushes a little. "It's gorgeous and like everything is a picture. I can't wait until I can go back out with my camera."
"Does Grant lock you in the basement at night?"
Gerard teases. Frank laughs. "It's an old house, but I haven't seen any signs of a dungeon." Grant's head snaps up, and after a fleeting, inscrutable look, he laughs. "You're going to ruin my reputation, Frank." Frank's actually not sure what Grant thinks would ruin his reputation, having a dungeon or not having one, so he just makes a face at Grant and keeps talking. "Nah, I just got sick. Nothing major, that is, nothing out of the ordinary for me, although it always sucks. I'm feeling better, though, so I can get back to not being the worst employee ever pretty soon." Gerard laughs a bit.
"You're pretty much the best, Frank, I have no doubt."
Frank can feel himself blush, but it also feels pretty good to hear that. Grant finishes putting his shoes on and shoves the long sleeves of his t-shirt up around his elbows. He's running a bit later than usual this morning. He can hear Frank moving around down the hall as he closes his door. When he turns around, Frank has just come out of the bathroom and his hair is damp and he's wearing jeans but no shirt, holding a towel in one hand. Grant almost turns back around because he can't. His eyes are skating over Frank's skin, finding tattoo after tattoo that he's never seen, that he wants to touch, and he doesn't say what he wants to say, which is either, "Oh, fuck," or, "Let me touch you." Instead, he just says, "Good morning."
"Morning,"
Frank says, eyes meeting Grant's and holding. Grant can't tell if he's been caught staring or not, so he just smiles and says, "I'll start the kettle." Once he's safely downstairs, he takes a deep breath. He's actually surprised nothing like this has happened yet, and he can't tell if he's sorry. There are, thankfully, other things to think about besides Frank's gorgeous ink. He's getting mugs out of a cupboard when Frank comes downstairs, and Frank leans past him to open the bread box and crosses to the toaster.
"I bought some more of that jam you like. Katie told me they have a new flavor," Frank says.
Grant sets the cups down and hands Frank the French press. "Oh, thank you. I'd forgotten we were low. I'll need to fax some documents today, but I think I forgot to sign one of them, so I'll go check after breakfast."
"Sure,"
Frank says distractedly, measuring out his coffee grounds. They finish breakfast mostly in silence, and then Grant heads back upstairs once Frank has disappeared into the corner of Grant's sitting room that he's taken over with his computer and files. Grant boots up his programs for the day and finds himself leaning back in his chair, making an absent-minded study of which corner of his office would be most easily transformed into a workstation for Frank.
Then he remembers that this is supposed to be temporary, and Frank's fine where he is, and it doesn't make any sense to be planning long term. Frank pokes his head in a little while later. Are the documents you wanted faxed ready? Oh, give me a moment and they will be. Grant picks up the stack of paper and shuffles through, looking for the blank signature line. He finds it and scrawls out his name and hands the papers over to Frank. Grant raises an eyebrow at him when Frank starts laughing. You've got ink on your cheek. How did you even manage that? Grant rubs at his cheek, and Frank just laughs harder. Stop, you're just smearing it everywhere. It must be on your fingers, too. Throw out that pen and stay right there. He disappears and comes back with a damp, soapy rag. Frank grabs Grant's chin and turns his head and rubs gently at his face. Grant clenches and releases his fists to keep from grabbing Frank's hips and pulling him into his lap. He works hard to keep his breathing regular and steady. There, Frank says softly, pressing the cloth into Grant's hand. Now wipe off your hands. Grant does, and when he's done, Frank takes the rag and disappears again. The next time he comes back, he grabs the papers to fax. Grant sighs when he's finally out of earshot. It's not that Grant's bad at relationships. Okay, perhaps it is. He doesn't have any problems finding companionship, should he desire it, but a relationship is a different beast. It's difficult to shed the persona these days. With the people he works with most closely, the people he calls friend, there's no artifice on his part. Frank is perhaps the closest of all, in some ways, but in others he persists in holding himself apart. The person who is controversial Scottish writer, Grant, is perhaps not so far removed from Frank's boss, Grant. And Grant doesn't know how to get himself out of that box. Their departure date sneaks up on him despite all the packing and making ready that he'd been doing during Frank's recuperation. He's not ready to give Frank back to L.A. Even the fact that San Diego is within days isn't enough. He'll have to share in San Diego, too. Not only Frank, but himself. Yet he's excited, as he always is, to see old friends and be with the community he loves. It's the very definition of a mixed blessing. Grant insisted Frank book them into first class for the flight back to L.A. Frank is wide-eyed about it, but he deserves it as far as Grant is concerned. Grant can tell he's trying to stay awake and enjoy it, but he's not long recuperated from his illness, and his eyes start drooping. Soon enough, he falls asleep, listing over toward Grant in his sleep. Grant smiles softly down at his head. Awake, Frank protests the smallest gestures of comfort and care. Asleep, he is quietly pliable, and Grant gently maneuvers him so his head is resting on Grant's shoulder and signals for the flight attendant. He has her hand him a blanket, which he drapes over Frank, and lets him sleep the flight away. Frank wakes up as they're descending into Los Angeles.
Sorry, he mumbles, moving back into his own seat. If I was annoyed, I'd have woken you up or moved you, Grant says as he closes his notebook.
Frank tries to move his arm to grab his bag and seems baffled by the fact that it's stuck, still wrapped in the blanket Grant had covered him with. He looks over at Grant, who shrugs and smiles at him.
Planes get cold.
Thanks, Frank says. He still sounds groggy, and he doesn't say anything more, just grabs the rest of his things quietly. They land and deplane, and Grant shoves him into a cab and tells him to take the rest of the day and the next day off. Grant takes his own cab home, letting himself into a quiet, empty house. He makes a mental note to call Scotland tomorrow and check on the cats. He'll only be away for about 2 weeks, but he hates to leave them without company. He hesitates in the doorway of his office for a moment, but his own exhaustion is starting to set in, and he decides to change and sit down with a book instead. The next day, in the early afternoon, his phone rings. It's Frank.
I know I'll see you tomorrow, maybe? I'm not totally sure what the day is anymore, but I will be honest with you, I'm going stir-crazy in my own apartment, and I just wanted to know if you...
I don't need you to come in today, Frank. In fact, I expressly forbid it. I'll see you tomorrow, we'll make sure everything is ready, and we'll take the train down to San Diego in the evening.
Are you working? I hope I didn't...
Grant laughs. You caught me in the middle of procrastinating about packing, actually.
Shocking. But, God, don't remind me. I need to unpack before I can pack for San Diego. Thank God I did most of my laundry at home. I mean, before we left Scotland.
Frank stammers. Grant laughs again to hide the way he really wants to repeat, home?
I'm sure you're up to the task, Frank. Just don't forget to leave extra room in your bag. I've never known anyone to leave Comic-Con with the exact same things they went with.
All I want is a bat phone,
Frank teases.
I think it would look good in my office. Or maybe your office. Maybe you'd be more likely to answer it.
I can leave you here, Grant threatens, and Frank laughs. It's a good sound.